This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. A visit to the doctor's office can be a very different experience for racial minorities than it is for whites. Numerous studies have shown that blacks and other minorities generally wait longer for diagnosis, receive less aggressive treatment, and often suffer worse outcomes for a wide variety of illnesses. In response to such problems, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist today introduced legislation aimed at reducing and eliminating health disparities for racial and ethnic minorities. This move comes shortly after the Department of Health and Human Services was criticized for trying to downplay the problem in a report on disparities in health care. Later in this hour, we'll be talking about the most recent development in stem cell research and the medical and legal controversies it stirs up. But now we want to hear from both sides of the health care gap. If you're a person of color, what kind of experience have you had in the doctor's office? And if you're in the medical profession, is this a concern where you work? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now by phone from Capitol Hill is Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist. Thanks for being with us, Senator.
Good, Lynn. Great to be with you this afternoon.
Perhaps you could briefly summarize for us what's in this legislation.
Well, real quickly, we're addressing a problem that you just referred to, and that is that African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic Americans are having mortality rates, infant mortality rates, serious complications after treatment at a much higher rate than others. These healthcare disparities we address in a bill introduced today, a bipartisan bill. I, Senator Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, Badcock from Mississippi, Mike DeWine from Ohio, and others are jointly introducing a bill called Closing the Health Care Gap Act of 2004. It goes right at the heart of addressing these health care disparities, which, as I when I introduced the bill, basically said these health care disparities, these gaps, are unacceptable in America today.
This is the result of some complex social, economic, historical factors. How does this bill go right to the heart of that? How do you prioritize what has to be done first to improve this situation?
Well, we know that millions of Americans experience health care disparities in health outcomes as a product or as a result of ethnicity, of race, of gender, of limited access to quality health care. The disparity populations are exhibiting poor quality health outcomes and have higher rates of everything, HIV, AIDS, diabetes, infant mortality, cancer, heart disease, other illnesses. So a complex problem, but a problem that can be clearly defined. In the bill itself, we do several things, just to list them quickly, and hopefully people can look at it in more detail. But we expand access to quality health care for disparity populations, introducing what we call patient navigator systems, health literacy and prevention efforts. Secondly, we strengthen the national efforts in coordination to reduce and hopefully eventually eliminate these disparities. Thirdly, we address head-on increasing the diversity of health professionals and promoting cultural competence in research and in education. And lastly, we promote more aggressive health professional education, which is directly intended to reduce those barriers to care. And lastly, the whole research effort is underscored in the bill so that we can identify the sources of these racial, ethnic, and geographic disparities, and then to determine intervention strategies that we can apply at the local and national level.
Senator, you yourself are a physician. When you were practicing, did you see evidence of this kind of, or the results of this kind of unequal treatment?
Every day. I treat heart disease, cardiovascular disease, and I was in medicine for 20 years before coming to the United States Senate. And that is probably one of the reasons you saw us address global HIV/AIDS last year, $15 billion, 23 million people dead, another 40 to 60 will die unless we act. We acted last year. You saw it with prescription drugs, where right now people in Medicare were not getting their hypertension diagnosed or treated. Either one, we hit it in this Medicare bill just straight on, action solutions. And now I want to do the same thing with healthcare disparities. Diabetes. Right now, we know that Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, and African Americans are twice as likely to suffer from diabetes. Diabetes contributes directly to the heart disease patients that I treated, but I had to treat them late. They came in with a heart attack, intensive care. I transplanted patients took out their hearts to put new hearts in because of diabetes. Well, if you go all the way back to the root with what I just said, and that is that African Americans have twice the incidence of the diabetes, or they're twice as likely to suffer from diabetes and serious complications. If we address it head on, then I won't have to do heart transplants. People won't have the massive heart attacks, and that's why we're going right at the root problem.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on our show today.
Great to be with you. Thank you, Lynn.
Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee, he joined us by phone from his office at the Capitol. Many medical organizations have studied the problem of racial disparities in health care. Last September, the group Physicians for Human Rights released a report that synthesized the results of 3 decades of research to present a long list of how health care inequalities relate to specific diseases. One of the leaders on that report, Dr. Jack Geiger, joins us now in Studio 3A. He is past president of Physicians for Human Rights and a professor emeritus of community medicine at CUNY Medical School. Thanks so much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
When you sifted through all this data, what were some of the specific trends that emerged on this issue of inequality in healthcare?
Well, I think it's very important, particularly following some of Senator Frist's comments, that we sort out the two different things that are meant by health disparities.
Okay.
There are two kinds of health disparities. Health disparities in what's called health status, life expectancy, death rates, illness rates. The fact there is that African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, some of the Asian sick subgroups, live sicker and die younger for all kinds of complicated reasons: the quality of life, income, economics, housing, food, all of the social determinants of health. That's one meaning of health disparities. But the second, those are the gaps. The second meaning is disparities in the quality, comprehensiveness, and aggressiveness of medical care that people receive on the basis of race or ethnicity or gender or socioeconomic class. In English, we are experiencing discriminatory and disparate treatment in medicine by race. And let me illustrate what that problem is about. And it's the problem that has just surfaced with a report by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality and the question of whether it got censored and then uncensored.
And we're going to get into that
a little bit later.
But let's.
If we take two men, just to give an illustration, if we take two men, like the ones that Senator Frist was describing with heart disease, one black and one white, and they're both 70 years old, they both have Medicare Part A and B, the same insurance, and they both have the same lesions in their coronary arteries, and they both have the same presence or absence of other disease, and they have the same income and the same education, and they are in the same hospital. The African-American patient is anywhere from 30 to 80% less likely overall to get coronary bypass grafting or angioplasty or any of the other sophisticated interventions, even when by standard criteria they are appropriate. And you can find evidence of this over the whole spectrum of diseases, whether we're talking about garden variety treatment of pneumonia and congestive heart failure or kidney disease or diabetes, or eye disease. Minorities experience systematically differential and usually lower quality and less comprehensive care. That contributes to those other gaps, but it's not the same thing.
So two people going in, putting aside whether somebody doesn't go for the health care in enough time. That's one issue you're saying. The other issue is they go both at the same exact time with the same with the illness in the same place, and they get a different
differential
result.
Treatment of people who are already in the healthcare system.
And the causes for that, what it was.
Well, they're complicated, but we know, and we need to know more about them. But we know some of the things. One of them, and we don't know what proportion is due to what yet, but we know they're there. One of them is quite clearly subconscious negative stereotyping, racial and ethnic stereotyping on the part of the doctor. Oh, I don't want to give this person a bypass graft because I don't think he is energetic enough to do the rehab, and I'm not sure he's smart enough to understand all of what's involved. That's on the basis of no knowledge beyond the color of the skin or the accent in the spoken word. So stereotyping is clearly one part of it. With the best will in the world, there is some overt racism. Anybody who's practiced medicine, as I have, knows that you can come across that. But most of it is, what someone said, paved with good intentions. Most doctors don't set out to do this, but it happens without their awareness. Then there is deep minority mistrust of the medical care system, based on the historical memories of Tuskegee and experiences that people have had in the past. This is not just African Americans. And then there is differing cultural beliefs about the right thing to do about health or illness and its causes and its treatments, and a failure on the part of physicians very often to either understand those beliefs or to be able to communicate effectively. Mm-hmm. And that ends up this lack of cultural competence, so-called, interfering with appropriate treatment.
Did your report make specific recommendations?
Oh, yes, indeed, we did. And some of them are approached in the bill by Senator Frist, and others were in a bill introduced last November addressing the same topics by Senator Daschle and Kennedy. So maybe we will have some bipartisan progress on this. One of the first things we need to do is make sure that all clinical records are identified, not by individual, protecting privacy, but identified by race and ethnicity, because without that, we can't monitor what's happening. We can't issue a good report card. We can't find the places where, in fact, disparate treatment is occurring.
We are talking about disparities in health care services to minorities. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. We'd like to take a call now from Patty in Berkeley, California. Hi, Patty.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm a nurse case manager in the Bay Area, and I work with primarily workers' comp cases. But what I see is great disparity in how my Hispanic, Black, and Asian patients are treated. And a lot of that is because they can't well articulate, even in English, what their symptoms are. The doctors don't take enough time to do a history. And because medicine is fragmented, they tend to focus on whatever part is being looked at. And so, for example, I have a patient now who came in with a back injury. But if anybody had taken a decent history, they would have discovered that he also has a cervical injury with radiculopathy, as well as a head injury, and he's a new diabetic. So he was not going to get any decent care. The PA that worked in the doctor's office thought he was malingering. He's significantly injured. He can barely move anything. You only had to look at him to see that. But he didn't know how to articulate well to the healthcare professionals and advocate for him. Hmm. But he has a nurse case manager, and I think, I don't know, doctor, if what you're proposing in terms of your navigators are nurse case managers, but that's what I would recommend to you, because we tend to take excellent histories and comprehensive histories, and we can bring that to the doctor's attention. And fortunately, we can make the system work for people of all ethnicity.
Thanks so much for your call, Patty.
Okay.
Is that a good proposal, doctor?
Well, one of the things we need, certainly patient navigators and good nurse case managers are helpful. We also need more physicians who can speak Spanish and some of the other languages that are going to characterize the majority of people in this country by the middle of this century. And we need more physicians from African American, Native American, and Hispanic and Asian groups themselves, which helps to overcome these barriers of cultural understanding and communication.
We're talking about racial inequalities in healthcare. My guest is Jack Geiger. He's a past president of Physicians for Human Rights. If you're a member of a minority group, we want to hear from you about your experiences in the healthcare system. And if you're a healthcare provider, what have you seen? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK or send us an email at totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about racial inequalities in health care, what causes different races to get different treatment, and what can be done about it. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our guest here in Studio 3A is Jack Geiger, Professor Emeritus of Community Medicine at the City University of New York's Medical School, also past President of Physicians for Human Rights. Doctors, you know the federal government has begun to track these issues we've been talking about, but their recent report generated some controversy. Democratic congressmen accused Health and Human Services of whitewashing the study after the published version came out with much more mild language than a leaked first draft. This simmering debate spilled into the open when HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson testified before the House Ways and Means Committee. Washington Democratic Representative Jim McDermott questioned Thompson on changes to the report. We're going to hear some of that tape from Representative McDermott asking Thompson about these edits.
You even went to things like the Native American population in this country, where you point out that they have a lower death rate from cancer. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal. But what there was no mention of was that their overall life expectancies are significantly shorter than all other Americans, or their infant mortalities are substantially higher. The final version dropped all these examples. Now, I would like you to tell us who told you to rewrite this.
I didn't rewrite it, and thank you for bringing the question up. I'd like to clarify that.
Yes, yes. Please do.
Because I, when it came to my desk a couple weeks ago, I changed that order and we're putting out the original report just the way it was, without any changes whatsoever.
Well, could you explain to me how this happened in the first place? How did it go out on Christmas
Eve? I can explain it to you, but it's not something that I'm very happy about. Some individuals took it upon themselves that thought they were doing the right thing. They wanted to be more positive. And when it came to me, I says, no, we put it out the way it was. And that's the way it's going to be.
Dr. Geiger, you were actually consulted on this report. Can you explain what happened?
Yes, indeed. And I was one of the people who contributed to this controversy by writing an angry op-ed article in the Washington Post about the censorship of that report. What all this is about, the Congress mandated an agency of Health and Human Services to produce an annual report on these kinds of health disparities in medical care that we've been talking about. And the Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research and Quality, put out a first-rate, data-packed report with a very good and tough summary that said this is a national problem, it's pervasive, it's happening to lots of people, and it needs to be addressed, and gave case examples. And that draft circulated to some people in Congress and elsewhere. But it was held up, and then when the final approved version came out, all of those ugly truths were edited out, and it was there was an attempt to put a happy face on the report. And it's to Secretary Thompson's credit that he said, no, we're not going to do that. That was a mistake. We're going back to the initial report. If there's a gain in all this, it's not only that a very good report by a very good agency, AHRQ, gets out, but that much more attention than might have happened otherwise is focused on this set of facts, that people are treated differently within the healthcare system by race and ethnicity and primary language.
But what about some of the criticisms that were leveled while this controversy was going on, that this is an indication that the administration was trying to politicize science? This was the politicization of science.
Well, as you know, there has been a whole controversy about related issues, whether grants approved by the NIH should be approved and whether those concerns are properly political or not. I don't know why this was done, but if it was politicized, it is now unpoliticized, and that's the important thing at this point.
I'd like to read an email now. I'm an emergency doctor in active practice. I see these disparities every day. Most practices in town will not see people who are colored. This is done by limiting the type of insurance accepted, given that the presence of insurance is a marker for being white-skinned. Strangely, this just moves the deck chairs on the Titanic. Our group is a fee-for-service ed group. Thus, instead of the costs of unreimbursed care being spread evenly among the physicians, we bear it directly. Currently, this is over 25% of our patient load.
Well, what he's talking about, the fact that basically that we have 43 million people without any kind of health insurance in the United States, public or private, is a major problem and a major contributor to the gap. And about 25% of African Americans lack health insurance of any kind, and an even higher percentage, 35 to 40% of Hispanic Americans lack coverage. What we are addressing, and that's a contributor to problems of access and a contributor to the difficulties of providers. But the studies that I am talking about, more than 1,000 of them that we reviewed for Physicians for Human Rights and for the Institute of Medicine, which published a landmark report called Unequal Treatment in 2001, we are talking about people who are insured, who have the same insurance. Mm-hmm. So it's not an access problem that is causing these kinds of discrimination.
Let me just ask you something about that, because you've mentioned that a couple of times, that there are those who may not be going to a doctor in time. There are those who may not be insured. But then there are those who are going with the level playing field. Are there two different, or is there a two-pronged approach then to the problem that you have to have?
I think most people, including at this point, most people in the medical profession itself believe that we have to have universal coverage of health insurance in some form or another before these problems and other problems are going to go away. We have to remove the problems of access from people that don't have insurance for the sake of patients, for the sake of the whole of the healthcare system. But there are things that we need to do beyond that. Medicine is not immune from other forces that operate in American society, and racism and ethnic bias and cultural difficulties in an increasingly diverse society are not going away. One of the things that Physicians for Human Rights is going to be doing in a weekend or two is holding a national conference of some 500 or so medical students from all over the country to bring this problem to their attention so that we have a new generation that behaves differently.
See if we can get one more call in for you. Chris in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead, Chris.
I'm a surgeon in Philadelphia. I've worked in both an underserved area, and I now work in a private hospital. And, you know, I'm not sure if the data accurately reflects the attitudes and perceptions and current medical care, because if you're going back 30 years, you're delving into a pot that had some tainted physician views. And if you look at the past 10 years, I think you're going to see different attitudes in medicine in general. I mean, your example of the cardiac surgeon, coronary artery mm-hmm. bypass, I find kind of hard to believe because, you know, cardiac surgeons, if you know anything about the field, are ready to go for almost any bypass that they could find nowadays. So I just find it hard to believe that this is actual data that's current and reflective of the current situation.
Well, let's let Dr. Guider defend the data then.
What I would suggest you do, I could ask you to come and look at the Physicians Human Rights website where there is a whole annotated bibliography, but that might sound self-serving, so I'll ask you to go to the Kaiser Foundation's website and a site called Why the Difference, which is jointly sponsored by the American Heart Association and the American Journal of Cardiology. And there you will find, under a heading called Weight of the Evidence, a summary of 80 studies, 80 major careful studies describing just what I have been talking about, racial differences in the quality and care of treatment. So the evidence really is there. It is understandable. None of us who are physicians, and I suspect most of us who are patients, don't like readily to believe that this is happening. But it is, and we need to do something about it.
Thanks for your call, Chris.
The endpoint. Hello?
Yeah?
Some of the endpoints you study are using mortality in certain populations. And I think you're basing some of your argument on the delivery of care and not the presenting patient in the population. Would you comment on different groups' health status to begin with, dietary concerns, you know, going into these institutions,
This is something that I talked about a little earlier, and perhaps you missed it. There are two different but related problems here. One of them is health status, life expectancy, infant mortality, how sick people are and how soon they die. And that's due to a lot of environmental and social factors other than medical care. The problem we are talking about here contributes to that, but is different from that. It's the problem of people who are within the healthcare system being treated differentially.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Geiger. Dr. Jack Geiger is a past president of Physicians for Human Rights and an author of their report, The Right to Equal Treatment. We are waiting for some other guests to join us in the studio, and they're on the phone, I'm sorry, with several major reports out detailing the existence of racial inequality in access, treatment, and outcomes for medical care. Attention is turning to the continuing efforts to improve the situation. With us now is Dr. Vicky May. She's professor of clinical psychology and health services at UCLA and the director of the university's new Center for Research, Education, Training, and Strategic Communications on Minority Health Disparities. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Also on the line is Dr. Joseph Bettencourt, a senior scientist with the Institute for Health Policy and Program Director for Multicultural Education at Massachusetts General Hospital, and he joins us from Boston, Massachusetts. Both of you, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Bettencourt, is the medical community moving to address this issue?
Yeah, you know, I think they are, and I just wanted to reflect back a little bit on your last caller's perception about disparities. I sat on two Institute of Medicine committees, one, the committee that produced the report on equal treatment, that really reviewed over 600 articles in the peer-reviewed literature around disparities, and among a committee of 15 people, built almost like a jury, because that's the way the Institute of Medicine does its business, over 2 years reviewed all the evidence, and I think I would just say that we found that disparities in healthcare are real, and I'm not surprised. I think for all of us as practicing healthcare providers, this is something that we are reticent to buy into. A recent survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation showed, in fact, that out of 2,600 practicing physicians surveyed about this issue, the majority of physicians say the healthcare system never or rarely treats people unfairly based on their race and ethnicity. 14% said never, 55% said rarely, and this is in the face of an Institute of Medicine report that is really highly esteemed, impartial, unbiased. And so I think the Institute of Medicine has given us, and part of our study was to lay a blueprint to address this issue. And it is being addressed nationally, I think, in a stepwise fashion from a variety of different areas, from the standpoint of identifying methods to identify where disparities are at our hospitals and our healthcare systems, to improving our healthcare system's ability to deal with patients with limited English proficiency, moving towards education and dealing directly with this issue of pretty much low awareness of this as a problem that plagues our healthcare system.
Now, you work with doctors and medical students both trying to deal with this issue?
That's correct. I've been working with a fair amount of colleagues nationwide, in particular in New York City with Drs. Carrillo and Green, and also here in some work in Boston, focusing particularly on an area that's called cultural competence or cross-cultural education that really at the base has a goal to increase the awareness among healthcare providers about the issues of disparities and provide them with the knowledge and the tools and the skills to be able to not only be aware of these issues but to be able to deal with them, to communicate more effectively with patients regardless of their race, ethnicity, culture, and class, and to rest assured that they have and feel comfortable with their skills to be able to provide the highest quality of care to any patient they see. So really, this field focuses on pulling the blinders off, saying we have this issue. Many patients present to us with a variety of different perspectives. We think that there are certain tools and skills that could help us take care of all patients, but in particular might open our eyes to some of the problems and some of the issues that patients of color, may face in the clinical encounter.
Dr. Joseph Bettencourt, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Dr. Vicky Mays, you come at this from a different perspective, from the community perspective. Is that right?
Yes, from the research side as well as from the community perspective in terms of the work that we've been engaged in here at the center with getting perspectives on, you know, what people think is actually going on when they go in from care. Perceptions that they're being discriminated against, the perceptions, for example, that they don't get the same kind of care. And often people look at this problem as if it is a matter of just things that have happened in the past. Everyone keeps referring to Tuskegee as the overriding legacy as to, you know, what's going on. But what we find is that there are some subtle and not so subtle ways when people go in for care that they're treated. There are difficulties in terms of access. I mean, things as simple as translation services. What many people find is that there's no training in terms of translation in medical settings. We have training for translation in courtroom, but we don't have training, for example, in translation in the healthcare arena. So the quality of that is quite poor. People sometimes get poor directions on what to do when they leave. They get poor directions on follow-up visits. So I think there's a number of areas, some small and some very large, where you can see the discrepancies that result in different outcomes.
We want to try and get a call in before the break, Dr. Mays. So let me just see if we can go to Jaffer. I believe that's the name in Massachusetts. Hi.
Hi. Well, the last caller, what he said is that the person who are of color or of ethnicity, they don't carry the insurance. That's not true. My wife was taken into UMass in Worcester and for some chest pain, and she was like shoveled like a soccer ball from here and there and from here and there, and then they didn't perform her certain procedures. At the end of the day, she let her go. They let her go without her clothes, so she has to come back home in the hospital clothes, and which I don't find fair. And they got money from my insurance, and they asked me to pay the money. So my part from was $100, and the insurance paid them rest of the money. So what your caller was telling us is not true at all, and that happened in UMass Worcester.
Ah, Dr. Betancourt, maybe you can respond to that.
Sure. I mean, I think. I mean, again, reflecting back on the Institute of Medicine report, it's important to understand that that study, carried out over 2 years, really looked at disparities in health care when controlling for insurance and social factors. So we're not comparing apples to oranges here. We're comparing apples to apples and saying if patients have the same insurance, do they receive a different quality of care? And this isn't a thing of the past. I mean, do I feel personally that the healthcare professions are beginning to understand and address this as we train new healthcare professionals? Is there greater awareness? Absolutely. So I think there is promise in the future, but I would say that clearly we have these issues of disparities, and they're not only based on race, ethnicity. We see them for other populations based on social classes.
All right, we're going to continue the discussion after a short break, and after that break, we're also going to take your questions on the newest development in stem cell research. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about trying to close the racial gap in healthcare on Talk of the Nation. Our guests are Dr. Joseph Betancourt, Program Director for Multicultural Education at Massachusetts General Hospital, and Dr. Vicky Mays, Professor of Clinical Psychology and Health Services at UCLA. We'd like to take a call now from Amir, who is calling from Dover, Delaware. Amir, hi. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good day. How are you?
Good. Go right ahead.
Well, basically, I'd like to respond to the form that you all are having right now. I'm in the military, and I've seen a variety of different things in a variety of different countries, but I'd like to address and challenge the prominent black individuals in our community. For example, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, individuals like that who possess a lot of money in the black community and have a lot of clout. My question to them, as far as the medical system is concerned, is why aren't there any black hospitals that cater to our specific needs? It's a historical fact that black lives hold no value in the medical system. It's a historical documented fact. I mean, anyone in their right mind knows that. But my problem that I'm having is I just can't understand for the life of me why we're so reliant on other ethnicities and races to adhere and take care of our particular problems and needs when we as a people need to move forward and take responsibility and assume the custody and responsibility for our own people.
All right, let me see if Dr. Vicki Mays can respond to your concern, Amir. Thanks so much for your call.
Sure. There actually are a number of hospitals that historically black medical centers. For example, here in Los Angeles, the Charles Drew University Medical School was designed to be in the inner city, and it really does, in terms of both its practice and its research capacity, looks very specifically at the health needs, the health patterns and health behaviors of specific racial and ethnic minority groups, and that's just one of several. So we actually do, and I think that what you'll see is, particularly in terms of the health disparity agenda that's currently funded by the National Institute of Health, there has been some investment in trying to have both data as well as evidence practice guidelines for working with a variety of different racial and ethnic minority groups. So I can't answer about Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan, but I can answer about the professions who really are trying to make sure that there is an increase in the number of minority doctors available who can really share this kind of information and guide us in terms of healthcare practices and policies.
Dr. Mays, I do think that caller reflects something we've talked about more than once on this program today, and that's a really pretty deep mistrust of the
right.
system that's there.
Right.
And that is part of what you are trying to address.
Exactly. Part of the mistrust that's there, I think, comes from the notion that when people step into medical centers, almost regardless of who's there, the perception is, as one of the other earlier callers said, is they do something, but they don't seem to do what is enough. It seems that the type of care that the individual is getting doesn't seem to be the type of care that people perceive that non-minorities get. And again, the data supports that really is the case. So it's, you know, we say mistrust as if it's, you know, misplaced, but it's actually that distrust is probably appropriate in some instances.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us today, Dr. Mays.
Thank you.
Dr. Vicki Mays is a professor of clinical psychology and health services at UCLA. I'd also like to thank Dr. Joseph Bettencourt, program director for multicultural education at Massachusetts General Hospital.
Thank you.